Now let me introduce our next speaker, Dr. Tim Bartik. Dr. Bartik has been a senior economist with the well-respected and independent W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo, Michigan since 1989. He's one of the country's leading experts on what works and what doesn't in economic development policies that are being implemented in states and municipalities across the country. He's published 4 books, 70 scientific journal articles, 28 policy reports. And one of his books was named among the most noteworthy books in industrial relations and labor economics by the Industrial Relations section of Princeton University. His most recent book that he's going to be discussing today is Investing in Kids, Early Childhood Programs and Local Economic Development. He's a popular speaker, having given presentations at the National Governors Association, the Midwest Council of State Governors, the National Association of State Development Agencies, and most states in the Midwest. Dr. Bartik received his PhD from the University of Wisconsin, Madison. More important, he tells me he met his wife here while he was in graduate school. And he also has some special insight into being a policymaker. He served on the Kalamazoo School Board for 8 years. And he tells me he was able to accomplish some really good things for kids during that time. But he said he also can identify with any policymakers in the audience who've had the experience of being attacked as a knave, a fool, or part of a conspiracy. So Dr. Bartik's talk today is Early Childhood Programs as an Economic Development Tool, Investing Early to Prepare the Future Workforce. Let's give a warm Wisconsin welcome.
Well, good morning to all of you, and thank you very much for inviting me. What I'd like to do this morning, as Karen said, this is based on this book that I wrote that came out 2 years ago, Investing in Kids, Early Childhood Programs and Local Economic Development, and I want to do 3 things in my talk. One, I want to explain a little bit what are the effects of early childhood programs on local economic development? How do they occur? And perhaps I should, before I go any further, define some terms here. So early childhood programs, people tend to think just of preschool. So I certainly am including that. I'm also including child care programs. I'm also including parenting programs. So for example, there are many parenting programs that are home visiting programs where the program does a number of visits to a mom and a kid and tries to improve the parenting there. So that's what I mean by early childhood programs. I have a very broad definition, in other words. And by local economic development, I simply mean raising per capita earnings in the state or local economy and doing that by attracting more and better jobs. Pretty simple definition, higher per capita earnings for state residents. So I'm going to discuss that. And once I get into that, the basics of the returns, I'm then going to discuss how does the rate of return to state economies vary with different characteristics of these early childhood programs, with how they're designed, who they target. And then the third thing is I'm going to make some reflections on what are some policy issues facing Wisconsin. Okay, so how does this work? How do these programs actually affect a state economy? There are 2 mechanisms. The first mechanism is how it affects kids. If these programs are high quality, if preschool, if child care and home visiting parenting programs are high quality, they affect the skills of their former child participants, not only when they go through the K-12 system, when they become adults, they're more productive. And then this gets back to a question that came up later about whether people stay. It may be somewhat surprising, the statistics show that over 60% of all Americans spend most of their working career in the state where they spent their early childhood. It's about the same across the country. I mean, it's that percentage or higher for Wisconsin. It's a little lower for smaller states like Wyoming or Rhode Island, not much lower, actually. So people aren't as hypermobile as sometimes is assumed. 60% will stay. And having an improved labor supply, by which I mean both higher quantity of labor supply and higher quality, will attract more and better jobs. As Karen mentioned, I spent most of my career studying what drives business location expansion decisions, and the quality of the state's labor force has some of the largest effect on business location and expansion decisions. And in fact, it needs to be recognized that there are huge spillover effects here. So, you know, someone might ask, maybe they wouldn't do it out loud, do it quietly, why should I worry about other people's kids? I don't think my kid needs preschool. Why should I worry about other people's kids? Well, one reason is that there's huge spillovers. Businesses don't just want some skilled workers, they want a lot of skilled workers. I can have the best skills in the world at my firm, but if the other workers aren't skilled at that firm is going to have a harder time introducing new technologies, and that's going to affect my wages. So everyone has a stake in this, in making sure that all children have high skills as adults. Anyway, that's mechanism one, the effects on the kids when they grow up and become adults. Mechanism two is the effects on parents. So child care programs, by providing child care, increase labor force participation of parents. By participating in the labor force, parents acquire on-the-job training skills. They're going to have long-run wages that are higher. Home visiting and parenting programs affect parents in a somewhat different way. It turns out, and maybe this is common sense, you really can't just go in and affect parenting of a single mom without affecting the whole life course of that person. I mean, these things are interwoven. You can't just go in and say, gee, we're just going to affect parenting. We're not going to try to affect how things turn out for you in the labor market or whatever. So these programs have very pronounced effects on the moms you intervene with. And having more labor supply and a higher quality labor supply of parents also attracts more and better jobs. Obviously, that's a more immediate effect than the effects on former child participants. So that's the mechanism. Now, I want to focus, because my book focuses, on three specific types of early childhood programs. First, high-quality universal preschool for a half day for all four-year-olds. Price tag for that's about $5,000 a kid. If you did it at full scale nationwide, the cost would be a little bit less than $15 billion. Second would be, and this would be modeled after programs like the Chicago Child Parent Center program, or the kind of programs that the state of Oklahoma has, for example, or Georgia. Second type of early childhood program I want to talk about is high quality, full day, full time child care and preschool from birth to age five. This would be modeled and has been studied in the Abercedarian program in North Carolina. And also, there are these things called Educare centers that the Buffett Early Childhood Fund and other foundations have supported around the country, you may have heard of. Now, that is really expensive. It cost over $60,000 a kid for the whole 5 years. But because it's targeted at disadvantaged families, the cost nationally wouldn't be quite as great as you might think. That cost somewhere, if you did it at full scale, if every disadvantaged kid in this country had access to full-time, high-quality child care and preschool birth to age five, the price tag is about $40 billion nationally. The final program is the Nurse Family Partnership, which is one particular parenting and home visiting program that uses nurses to do the home visits and has a particular model. It targets disadvantaged first-time moms. And it starts in the prenatal period and goes to the kids age two. It also is expensive, surprisingly. It costs about twice as much per kid as preschool, about $10,000 a kid. But because it's so targeted, not just disadvantaged, it has to be the first-time mom, its cost nationally would only be $4 billion. Now, why focus on these three programs as opposed to a million other things you could have focused on? Because for these three programs, we have the best research evidence, not only of effects on, say, school test scores, which is important, but also on adults. So we actually have been studying these programs long enough. We have good enough comparison groups, either through random assignment or other means. We actually have been annoying former participants in these programs with annoying questions until they're in their late 20s, 30s, age 40. Social scientists can be quite persistent if you don't tell them to go away. Okay, so what do we find if we look at how these programs might affect state economy? If you look at the effects of these programs on the quality of the labor force, if you look at how many people would stick around the state economy, and you look at what you would expect that to do in attracting more and better jobs, what you find is that per dollar invested, the present value of per capita state earnings would increase by about $3, about a 3-to-1 benefit cost ratio for this half-day universal preschool, and about $2, a 2-to-1 benefit cost ratio for this high-quality comprehensive child care preschool, and then this high-quality parenting program. Now, the mechanisms are somewhat different. The half-day preschool for four-year-olds doesn't do a lot for parents directly. It's not enough time to really profoundly affect labor force participation of parents. It's almost all due to effects on kids. The other two programs are about half due to effects on parents, half due to effect on kids. Now, I'm sure that someone somewhere has seen studies showing that preschool has a 16-to-1 rate of return. So I have 3-to-1, so where do the other 13 go? Well, I'm deliberately restricting myself. First of all, I'm throwing away any benefits for someone who moves out of state. So if someone gets an early childhood service in Wisconsin and for some strange reason they move to Chicago, I'm throwing away any benefits for them from these calculations and getting that 3-to-1. That's one thing. Second thing is I'm just looking very narrowly at these earnings benefits, earnings per capita benefits. And for a lot of early childhood programs, actually over half the benefits are anti-crime benefits, reductions in crime. So I'm not even counting those. So you can get up to 16-to-1 if you add in the out-migrants and the crime stuff. I've studied business tax incentives a lot. These rates of return are pretty much comparable to the best business tax incentives. I emphasize best because most business tax incentives in the U.S. are not the best. And you know, the bang for buck obviously is highest for universal preschool. However, because the child care is so much more expensive, actually the net benefits are higher for the child care than for the preschool. But I'll come back a little later on because it raises some difficult trade-offs for policymakers. Now, I think we need to think a little bit about, well, I always try to be a skeptic. And let's think about this. It really does seem somewhat strange, if you think about it, that 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, for a school year at age 4, would have a large effect on earnings at age 40. I mean, you think about it, isn't that kind of weird? I mean, it seems really weird. And the question is, how is that even remotely plausible? And the thing to realize, it's not so much that the kid, you know, that how many letters you know at kindergarten entrance or your math facts at kindergarten entrance is driving things. What drives things is that if kids start kindergarten having learned a lot before kindergarten, they learn more in kindergarten, therefore they end up learning more in first grade. They're, you know, so it's not so much, it's the effects on the growth path of learning that it induces. And furthermore, and this connects my presentation to the other speakers, it looks as if a lot of the long-run effects are probably due to effects on so-called soft skills or social skills. So by which I mean how the kid interacts with their peers, with the teacher, how they plan their time, a variety of skills like that. And the reason I say that the evidence suggests that, in a lot of early childhood programs, you'll find findings that the effects on hard skills, that is, whatever math and reading tests measure, tend to fade somewhat or even totally as kids progress in K-12. And yet, oftentimes, the effects on high school graduation and earnings still occur. So there must be something that we're not measuring as well that's going on that is driving these long-term returns. And it seems likely it's soft skills that are doing it. And that makes some sense, because if you actually look at what the labor market requires, when employers complain about not getting the right skills, a lot of it is they can't find workers with the right soft skills. I mean, hard skills are a problem, but soft skills are maybe even a greater problem. Now, that the importance of soft skills raises some issues for accountability. I'm all in favor of accountability. We want to hold these early, and I'll come back to this later on, we want to hold these early childhood programs accountable for results. We want to be very careful, for example, that we're not simply looking at what we can easily measure in terms of academic skills and judging whether a program is a high-quality program. So we wouldn't want to say just look at value added from the beginning of preschool to the end of preschool on math and reading, because the more profound benefits of preschool may be due to effects on soft skills. Now, there are ways of measuring soft skills, but they're harder to measure, and that creates issues for accountability. And the other thing is, obviously, if, in fact, what's really going on is that learning begets later learning, a lot depends on what happens in K-12. And in fact, there's evidence that there's some synergy here. The rate of return to high-quality preschool will be higher if the K-12 system is of higher quality, and the rate of return to investing more in K-12 will be higher if you have high-quality early childhood programs. On the other hand, I want to emphasize that one very successful preschool program, the Chicago Child Parent Center program, all the kids in that program go to Chicago Public Schools. Now, with all due respect to Chicago Public Schools, I do not think they have solved all the problems of that school district. And apparently, though, even if you don't solve the problems of the school district, high-quality preschool makes a profound difference in what happens to these kids long-term. Okay. Now let's talk about what matters to these rates of return. I've talked about high rates of return, but they will vary with the features of the program. First, we might talk about what we usually think of as program quality. Okay, there's evidence that lower class size in preschool makes a difference. Lowering class size has high rates of return. Teacher early childhood training. Lots of studies show that that matters. A more controversial area is whether you should require educational credentials, and if so, of what sort. Different studies reach different conclusions. What should be emphasized is all the exemplar programs in preschool, for example, use certified teachers. Now, do you have to have certified teachers? Well, different studies disagree. Now, part of the interaction may be if you require the teachers to be certified, but then your program pays them below public school wages, you may have very high turnover rates, and in fact, it may be counterproductive. But if you are willing to pay wages, it may be more productive. There's research on the Nurse Family Partnership Program that shows that nurses are better than paraprofessionals who do not have a college degree. However, we do not know whether or not, say, nurses are better than, say, social workers or other helping professions. And finally, we know from numerous studies that ultimately, and this makes sense, the quality of the teacher-student interactions matter. There are various ways you can measure that, and people go in and you go in and see what's happening to Johnny and Jamal and Susie right now. And what's happening to the individual kid makes a profound difference. Other characteristics of these programs you might worry about is, who do you target for these programs? And here we have a very different picture for different programs. For preschool, the evidence increasingly suggests that preschool seems to have about the same predicted dollar earnings effect on future adult earnings for kids from middle-class families as for kids from poor families. Now, obviously, the percentage effect on expected future earnings will be higher for the poor kids. But the absolute dollar effect, the benefit-cost ratio, is about the same for the two sets of families. Now, you might say, well, wait, I thought middle-class families, shouldn't they be fine without preschool? Well, as I said, a lot of what preschool is doing is social skills. It's a little bit hard for even the best parent to do all these soft skills on their own. It kind of requires a certain setting, and preschool provides that. On the other hand, if you look at other programs, for example, the Nurse Family Partnership Program, they did some experimentation, only worked for disadvantaged moms. Non-disadvantaged moms did not work, not effective program. Child care, we don't really know. I don't really know of any great study that shows whether child care is more or less effective for different income groups. Another issue in designing these programs is the timing of them. So from the studies I've looked at, if you move from half day to full day preschool, it, say, 3 hours a day, of 2.5, 3 hours a day of instruction, not to say 6 hours a day, two sessions, it doesn't double the benefits for the kid. They go up like 60%. So there's some diminishing returns. On the other hand, cost, if you move from a 3 hour day to a 9 hour day, tend to more than double. So there's some diminishing returns. Similar with 2 year pre-K. So if you have age 4 pre-K and you add age 3, it looks like the benefits don't double. They go up maybe 50, 60%. Cost about double. Finally, if you compare, what if we go from half day preschool at age 4 and then we go to this full flung EduCare approach of childcare full time, birth to age 5, what does that do? Well, it looks as if benefits go up 6 times, costs go up about 12 times. So there are diminishing returns, but all of these expansions I've talked about have net benefits. So it is the case that from a net benefit standpoint, the benefits exceed the costs of going to half day to full day, 4-year-old to 3-year-old preschool, and going from just preschool to childcare. Now, that raises some difficult trade-offs. Universal preschool has the huge political advantage of helping middle-class kids. So politically, that's better, gets the middle-class voter involved, while providing, a significant boost. If you calculate what would happen if we ran universal preschool at full scale, it would boost the income of the lowest income quintile, the lowest fifth of all families in family income, by about 6%. If you did nothing else to reform society, just did universal preschool for 4-year-olds, 6% boosts the earnings of the lowest income quintile. It has moderate costs, $14 billion. If you really want to have profound effects on the lowest income quintile, this EduCare Abbasidarian program approach of full-time childcare and preschool for all low-income kids from birth to age 5 would boost the earnings of the lowest income quintile by 36%. Which is just huge. It's profound transformation in the American income distribution. On the other hand, politically, this has no direct benefits for the middle class, has indirect benefits. Maybe you're less likely to get mugged, lower welfare, a variety of things. But it doesn't directly, immediately benefit your kid, your middle class kid, because these programs are targeted at disadvantaged kids, the Abbasidarian program. And it's very expensive. Nurse Family Partnership program is a lot cheaper, but because it's so targeted on a narrow group, it only provides a smaller earnings boost. Let me make some very quick observations to close up on Wisconsin preschool, Wisconsin early childhood programs, and I probably know enough here to be dangerous. I've read some things, I could have misinterpreted them, so I'm sure you'll correct me where I'm wrong. Wisconsin clearly is one of a leading state in participation in age 4 preschool. It's 6th in the U.S., 55% of all 4-year-olds. It's not at Oklahoma levels. Oklahoma is probably the leading state in preschool. They're up 74%. So obviously one policy option is, does Wisconsin want to think about getting from 55% to 74%? The second thing that's very striking to me is it's pretty clear the state so far has focused on half-day preschool for 4-year-olds in terms of preschool, and the idea is that wraparound care will take care of the rest, child care will take care of the rest of the day, and that at age 3 we're going to focus on child care as well. Other states are moving more into full-day preschool for age 4, or in some cases they're moving to 3-year-old preschool. Preschool is more expensive than child care. On the other hand, if you want to boost the quality of childcare, that costs money. So there's some interesting questions there. I noticed that the state recently has moved to having kindergarten literacy screening for entering kindergartners. One question I would have is, do you want to think about somehow trying to measure soft skills at kindergarten entrance? And finally, I understand as part of the Race to the Top grant the state got, that there's going to be some new longitudinal data system created for tracking students in early childhood. One question is, could that be done to help evaluate what preschool is doing in terms of pre and post test? Although I would caution, you might want to measure soft skills as well as hard skills. Second topic, childcare. What do we see there? Well, you know, Wisconsin is a very generous program, has relatively low participation rates, 22% birth to age 3, and that should say age 3 to age 5, 38% age 3 to age 5. Among eligibles, less than half are participating. Why is that? It looks as if about half the kids in subsidized childcare are in low-quality programs. State's trying to change that by changing the payment system so that higher quality programs get greater reimbursement. And, you know, the issue here with childcare is how does the state best increase participation and quality? And at some point the question is, what can you, you know, do you need more money in the system to really do that? And finally, some observations on home visiting. Relatively low, there's lots of local programs, there's relatively low, looks as if only one-third of first-time low-income moms would have an available slot in a program, so we're not at full scale here. And the question is, how can the scope be expanded? And one interesting issue is, are there ways to do it cheaper than having nurses? Not that I have anything against nurses, but you do want to think about cost-effectiveness, and could you do what you could do with social workers? And finally, a brief observation on governance. You know, Wisconsin seems to have a very statewide system in childcare, a very localized system in pre-K and home visiting. One program I'd encourage you to look at, it's a supplement to what you're currently doing. North Carolina has a program called Smart Start, which are grants to basically county-level agencies that, if you're not quite sure what you want to do you want to do preschool at age 3 or childcare or parenting? One way to do it is the state can give the authority and say, well, maybe, you know, Oshkosh wants to do one thing, Green Bay wants to do something else, Milwaukee wants to do something else. Maybe the needs actually differ across the state. And that's what North Carolina did. And the studies indicate this program, it was phased in geographically across the state. And following kids, they found that the appropriate number of years later, this program by itself raised test scores at third grade by about 2 months. Which is amazing given that a majority of kids in the third grade had not participated in the program. So it must have had much larger effects on the relatively, the minority of kids who actually directly benefited from a Smart Start program. So one thing that I think the state needs to think about is, how do you want to govern these programs? Do you want them all state-run, or do you want to decentralize more? And North Carolina may provide a useful model. Okay, so just to sum up, preschool and other early childhood programs have profound effects on a state's economy by raising the quality of the labor force. We know something about what makes for a good high return program. And Wisconsin clearly is doing a great deal in this area already and is a leading state in many respects. But there are clearly other options that could be considered that might increase the returns to the early childhood programs in the state even further. Thank you.